Welcome to Cultivate the Ordinary Podcast, curious conversations for the anxious, frustrated, and bored. I'm Travis.
And I'm Jesse. So often we're held captive by screens, schedules, and media that's mind-numbing and polarizing. This leaves us seeing dimly through a fog. We want to spark more imagination and a better awareness of God's presence in the everyday.
Join us on a fun journey of discovery and curiosity as we look at the ordinary through the lenses of joy, wonder, beauty, and hope. Welcome to the podcast. Today's episode, we are talking about all things foster care related. It is National Foster Care Awareness Month in the U.S. of A. So we're going to really talk about kind of just some awareness type of things. There's a lot of people that have very little understanding of foster care, of what the system entails, what it's like for kids in foster care, kind of, you know, just the experiences in and around it, ways to get involved, kind of some of the statistics, the sobering things, and the inspiring ways to get involved and make a difference. So Jess and I both work for the national org America's Kids Belong. Mission is committed to improving the outcomes and experiences for kids in foster care. And so there's a lot of awareness and helping in the messaging and recruiting of foster parents, and then ways to engage and help support foster families. America's Kids Belong is doing some exciting sort of pioneering, groundbreaking stuff with what's called foster-friendly communities, where they're kind of businesses have opportunities to help engage foster families and support them. There's an app that's been developed for that, where businesses can get engaged and then families can find them and receive discounts. There's stuff to support faith communities for how they can come and wrap around foster families. America's Kids Belong has just got a huge reach, and it's just been awesome to be part of and what we're doing with that. So get right more into this. How are you doing as we're just hanging out and tackling a big topic?
Oh gosh, I'm really excited. This is a topic that is just so near and dear to your and my hearts. We have always been very passionate about kids who are in foster care, kids waiting for adoption, the whole thing. And it's amazing. There's so many people who just don't know very much about it. You know, if you're not kind of in that space, there's no reason, like there's not really, you're not confronted with it. It's kind of the silent,
tragedy. That's a good way of saying it. It's a sort of silent thing that's actually, though, in reality, sort of taking shape everywhere. You've got a really cool kind of an analogy that you wanted to share about this sort of.
Yeah, no, this recently I came across something that the founder of America's Kids Belong posted to help people think. A lot of us know that recently there's been a string of tornadoes and, you know, there's just been destruction. And of course, with any sort of natural disaster, you see children crying, and there's sort of these pictures of homes being ripped apart and kind of the wreckage of and the trauma of what has transpired. So just for a minute, imagine a different kind of tornado. A social tornado that has ripped through your town and has left kids homeless in urgent need of either temporary or forever families. How do you think you would respond? Well, we're confident that you would care for these kids. Unfortunately, this isn't a scenario that you need to imagine. It's real. It is happening. It's not a physical tornado, but the wreckage and the trauma and the tragedy that we're talking about is happening to children all over the world. But in our country, we can actually do something about it. So I just thought that was really, it really grabbed me. The image of like, people really do respond in terms of like natural disasters and stuff like that. And there's many people responding to the need for foster parents and getting involved here. But then there's just a lot of people, they don't see it. They don't know.
Right. Right. And there's a lot of just kind of wrong ideas or, you know, myths that are perpetuated just about foster care and what it means to be in the system. There's a really powerful read called To the End of June, The Intimate Life of American Foster Care by Chris Beam. And it really takes a deep dive and look at foster care historically. And then it also kind of recounts stories interwoven throughout it of kids in foster care and their experiences. Really a noteworthy quote that kicks this off that really kind of sets the stage for better understanding the complexity involved with foster care and why there's, we'll kind of get more into that later as well. But it says that foster care is actually the fascinating, if sad, culmination of three separate lines of social policy toward poverty, racial difference, and child abuse, finally braiding together in the middle and end of the 20th century. And then there's another, and this is kind of a staggering thing, but it's where child welfare then in every state is tasked to, you know, place the kids and keep them safe, pull them out of abusive and neglectful situations, make decisions around, you know, when it's safe to, you know, have them return home to the bio families, you know, where adoption from foster care fits in. So there's so much happening here, but it says, this is why child welfare experts try to fix the myriad of problems in child welfare and fail. The problems are rooted in a society that cares little for its children, for its poor, its mentally ill, undereducated, incarcerated, addicted, and isolated. Child welfare is but a thimbleful of water on a raging social fire. Mm. And so, you know, there's this aspect to where, you know, I've heard things of where Americans spend more annually on pizza than on child welfare and protecting kids. You know, it's just, it's staggering. It's heavy. It's, you know, up to 70% of kids in care will be moved around. Like they're in care at least 2 years, 70% of them, and then multiple placements bouncing around. And you can imagine what that does to your education, your, you know, and so many things. So The last thing I'll say is a setup to kind of helping people that don't know much about foster care and all these converging dynamics. Is that there's about 400,000 kids in the foster care system, and about 100,000 of those kids will be eligible for adoption. But the primary goal of the foster care system is to reunify kids in foster care with their biological families, or when that's not possible, kinship placements to kind of keep that family, you know, peace intact, which is very crucial. There's a lot of studies that show, like, you know, even going into foster care, just the trauma of that, even in a good family, when you're broken away, taken away from your biological family, even if the factors that led to that necessitated that, that's still extremely traumatic and disruptive and does all kinds of things. So the last kind of thing around this too is, like, we often talk in America's Kids, like, if you, we talk about social wounds, and you mentioned Brian Mavis, who's writing a book on this, tackling this, but basically, yeah, if you care about things like trafficking, homelessness, you're going to get into some of these stats later, but, you know, poverty, you know, incarceration, addiction, all these things, you care about foster care, because foster care, we find, is a feeder into so many social wounds. Some have called it the foster to prison pipeline. I mean, it's just so many, like, and we can see why, you know, just with you've lost your identity in many ways, you've lost stability. Now you're placed in, you know, and I think what people don't understand as well in this whole thing is if you go into foster care and maybe you are going to be eventually going home and reunited, but when you're in care, you don't necessarily know the outcome of what's going to happen. You don't know, are mom and dad going to do the things that the court needs so that I can come home? What if, you know, they don't? What if, am I going to be adopted? What if I'm going to be in the care for the rest of my life? What, you know, of course you're not, it's up to 18, but all these questions kind of float around, and it's like, how can you grieve what you've not yet lost?
Right.
How can you, you're sort of in this holding place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's just layers and layers of uncertainty. And, you know, we even saw just kind of a pattern of, like, there was a little bit of a, you know, when a child first came into care, I think they have a lot of hope, like, oh, this won't be long, you know, I'll, mom and dad will figure things out. And,
right.
You know, maybe that's what even they've kind of been told, you know, by different people involved, that This shouldn't be long, you know, whatever. And then oftentimes it ends up months turn into years, and they just start to get really angry,
right?
Because they're just put on hold. They have no control over a lot of things.
You know, and kind of going back to the myths that you've talked about, this is largely for most Americans, you know, this invisible space. It's on the margins, not in front and center. And yet the effects are front and center everywhere. You know, it's, but, you know, one of the myths that's common is, you know, people can think of, well, are kids in foster care, are they in there because of their behaviors? Are they juvenile delinquents? Is that, you know? And primarily the reasons kids are in foster care are the abuse and neglect from their families of origin. Sometimes, or they're incarcerated, parents can be incarcerated, or addiction that's kind of stemmed into, you know, leading to these things. And so, you know, in most cases, I mean, the kids, like you've already said, are in care because of nothing that they've done at all, you know? And so, so they're living this life that's, you know, the outcome is suspended, don't know what's happening. And then so much of everything is just swirling around. And the thing that they need more than anything else is stability.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, that just that visual of everything swirling around takes me back to that tornado analogy, that this destruction is disorienting, and they don't know which way is up. So where does that stability come from? It comes from, like, the goal of foster parents, you know, foster families stepping in, becoming licensed and caring for these kids in this time, while they're waiting for reunification, which is the goal.
Right, exactly. And so, and I think, like, we want to cheer on the biological families getting the help they need and not demonizing them for, you know, I mean, some of these cyclical issues that sort of just have been kind of a hallmark maybe in a certain family where it's just struggling with things that just, and so we want to cheer these kids getting to go home when it's safe and that their families are supported. So that is the first thing that we're cheering on. But yeah, and this is just, it's just where the stability and importance of what a foster family means to a kid. You know, that place that you're stepping in and, you know, you're being there, being that place of stability while they're dealing with everything that they're dealing with. And then whatever happens next happens, but they've, you know, they're being safe, they're being loved and cared for. And met with in the very things that they're really struggling with. And so, you know, and so that's why whether you're a foster family for a long time, the attrition is staggering because it's very difficult. And I think a lot of people lack support, which America's Kids Belong is doing tremendous work in mitigating and turning that around. But it is difficult. But it's also this thing of where maybe it is just for a season for people to just say, you know, we're going to give this our year of doing this, you know, and that's big. So.
Yeah. And you know, many of the people who listen to this podcast are of the Christian faith, and they really do believe in mission and connecting themselves to hurting people and bringing hope. And one of the best ways that you can do that is get involved with foster care in any capacity. And being even connected to the biological family of the kids who are in care puts you close to a situation that you can be the hands and feet of Jesus. You can begin to help try to, you know, redeem situation.
Right.
I mean, we don't redeem it.
Right, but through us.
Through the care and the attunement and the listening and the support of like biological mom, you know, you're loving that kid well by helping their mom.
Right.
And hopefully they get to the point where they can go home. And if that's not possible, you know, then you can help transition them into an adoptive or permanent placement.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit more about what adoption from foster care looks like as well. But yeah, just the last thing I'd say on that to what you just said about, like, as Christians, you know, the motivation here is also to look at who God is you know, God call, you know, is actually described in the Bible as a father to the fatherless. In Psalms, it talks about God putting the lonely in families. I mean, all throughout Scripture, we see cases of God caring for, you know, what we don't hear this term a lot now, orphan. And in foster care, that's not even the case. But God has a huge heart for the lonely and the marginalized. And, you know, I think someone I've heard describe Moses with his first kid in foster care. I mean, floating out on the river and then adopt, you know. So it's just, we, you know, and then of course Christ, you know, and just his redemptive work of coming to, you know, his whole ministry was caring for those that were largely unseen and forgotten. So, you know, there's no leap here for the Christian at all. In fact, in James, we're often, you know, we're talked about to what is pure religion, to care for the orphan and the orphan and the widow. You know, that's pure religion. You know, is those acts. So, So let's talk a little bit about just, you know, and there's different kinds of foster parents, but, you know, so there's, you know, a general foster parents, and then there's the ones that are, you know, doing more specialized types of care. But for basically the basics here of talk a little bit about like the licensing process to become foster parents.
Generally, all licensed foster parents have to go through these steps. You know, it does vary a little bit. State to state, but this is pretty standard in most states, that you'll start a process looking for information. So you're going to start looking for an agency. So that could be a county agency or a private agency. And then you'll attend an orientation where you will get all your questions answered, see if this is a good fit for your family or if you want to plug in a different way than becoming licensed foster parents. But let's say you decide, yes, this is for us, and you fill out your application. You go through that whole process of paperwork, and you will then begin foster parent classes. So that does vary state to state, how many hours and whether they're, 6 weeks or, you know, two long Saturdays. It totally depends. Mm-hmm. So those are all questions to ask when you're looking at your agencies. After you've completed your classes, you'll begin what's called the home study process. So that is people coming into your home, actually physically looking at the conditions of your home and making sure it's a safe place for children, that you have the right amount of, you know, beds and adequate space, as well as interviewing you and your family. If you're married, that would be you and your spouse. If you're single, which you absolutely can be a single foster parent, you know, they would just interview you. But anybody who lives in the home would need to complete a background check and be safe. So that whole process, you know, takes some time for them to get through the interviews and then write up your home study. And then you will, in that waiting time, it's really recommended that you, you know, connect with a foster parent association, begin to kind of read a book or two, you know, meet some people, try to start building your bank of resources so that you become equipped and ready. Learn about trauma, because you'll get some in the classes, but there's absolutely more that is to be continually learned about what it's like for a child to come in with trauma and what some behaviors look like that would be different than, you know, maybe your biological kids who have what looks like similar behavior, how you would handle it when children come from trauma. So support is huge. Making sure you have people in your life, if you're connected to a church, having people in your church who are willing to step in, bring meals, offer to babysit, that they're saying sort of yes to this too, because if you're doing it completely by yourself, you likely could become one of those statistics that is done.
You will.
Within the first year.
I mean, well, yeah, within the first year. I
mean, have to have community.
This isn't the Lone Ranger stuff. It's, you know, not good for you or, of course, the kid in your care.
Yeah. And so, I mean, other than that, you really just wait for approval. And then once you're approved, you'll be connected to a caseworker who will, you know, call you up for placements. Mm-hmm. And then you would ask a series of questions to see if it's the right placement for you. And you have total choice in those situations, whether it's going to feel like it's good for your family, mm-hmm. what if you can handle the situation that the child has come out of. So all that stuff is a learning curve, but you can find those supports along the way.
Yeah, and we'll share links and stuff of that as well. I mean, and often communities that are decently sized, you know, you're going to have, you know, foster care networks and support groups and again, churches, you're starting to really see that have vibrant support communities within them. And of course, the work America's Kids Belong is doing. We have resources on the website we can share as well of sort of creating some of those resources in your church using the resources we have. So, you know, before we transition to the next part, as we're kind of talking about this, and then we're going to kind of get into some of our own experience and talking about that and some of the stories along the lines. A couple common misconceptions, I think it's good to unpack as we also talk about this. So one is, and foster parents hear this all the time, maybe you, as a listener, you've said this, and I think it can be meant from what feels like a compassionate place or a genuine place for sure, but we have to think of what we're actually meaning here. So people that ask or say, well, I just can't foster because I'd get too attached. This is one of the most common lines that people say. And so when we think about that, what we're then saying is, I mean, do these kids not deserve people that love them so immensely that they get so attached that is the very thing that they need to help really heal and be that place of stability? I mean, the kids that are in these situations, they just can't get out of foster care. We as adults can have the resources. This is why having the support and getting that and going to the people around us to grieve those losses and things like that, it is a big deal. We're not minimizing that. But the very thing they need is complete attachment.
Yeah. No, all of my research and stuff on like attachment styles and, you know, working with adults from trauma, I mean, it's immensely important that there's a framework, and if they did not get that secure attachment from their biological families, you know, if they're coming from abuse and neglect, it's likely they did not. Even if they're only with you for 6 months, if you become very much attached, their brains have a framework for what love and belonging is supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And they know what safety is supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. If you keep them at arm's length and like, okay, I'm just going to care for their basic needs, but I'm not going to get too attached, they don't heal. And that's what we want to help them do while they're in care, however long they're with us.
But the person, though, that's saying, I just wouldn't even do this because I would get too attached. I mean, what would you say to that? I mean, I've already kind of responded in that is what they need.
There's a good possibility that person, you know, hasn't kind of, you know, they need to prepare themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, that would not be the time to start if you are so scared that you're going to fall in love with this child and you can't say goodbye to them. There is like a level of self-awareness and self-work to be able to love hard and say goodbye.
You know? And then grieve that loss. And mm-hmm. again, there's so many tremendous resources, and there's, you know, about even that and what it means to even maybe take a season off or a break or like, you know, hey, but we're cheering on that Johnny left. You know, there's both that void and then that, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's exactly what they need are those that get so attached, that love fully with everything they have. And again, as the adults who have a choice, and we have a choice to take a break, and we have a choice to, you know, we can do self-care and find the resources to help ourselves. And, mm-hmm. you know, another real kind of common one, this is a really good question people can ask, and it's a really is that, you know, well, I want to do this, or I'm really excited about my spouse, or, you know, isn't on board, and And that's, again, very, very common. And so, you know, and what I've seen so often is that it is very common that the fire got caught early on. You know, you'll talk to people that maybe it was a young girl that at a little age, she wanted to be a foster mom someday or something, or, you know, a guy, you know, it's more commonly the other way around, but that can happen too. But where it's just, and then the other one, you know, maybe there's a lot of practical reasons or concerns or, you know, doesn't catch the fire as quickly, but then eventually does and goes on to become just an advocate for foster care and being a foster parent and stuff like that. So my whole thing when I hear that is, and on the other side, you can't force them. You know, the worst thing to do is to sort of drag your spouse, your partner into this, you know, because then they're not bought in. They're not, you know, they're not going to give the love and kind of provide that really safe, nurturing environment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't want to drag anyone in and make this happen either, but be patient with it. I think there's ways you can find, you know, stories and inspiring things that, you know, will motivate them to consider if they're open to that. Mm-hmm. And then also knowing that there's tons of other opportunities to get involved, even if you're not being a foster parent, that is just as vital and important. We'll talk about that mm-hmm. as well. So
yeah.
What do you have any thoughts around that?
Well, I know that was our story. Yeah? That I was much more interested and excited about the idea of foster care long before you were.
It is true. And again, of course, it's not always that way. That's the woman for, yeah. but more commonly for sure, you know, the wife or, you yeah. know, but I think I had a line once where I thought, you know, it's like, again, I'm kind of generalizing here, but like God uses her sensitivity to engage our passivity as men, you know, or maybe there's a tendency to not be quite as engaged on certain things like this issue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God sort of attunes to her sensitivity to kind of turn our heads, our passivity into the issue. And you'll mm-hmm. see like yeah. the dudes getting really fired up. And that is my other thing. We're really passionate about this cause and we do need more men to step into this. And,
mm-hmm. yeah. And not just the men to support their wives to do foster yeah. care, but like men that are like all in with those yeah. kids, just like they would with their bio kids. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, a large number of kids who come into care come from fatherlessness yeah. as well. So,
yeah, that's yeah. a major deal.
So the other side of this conversation is you have 65% of kids will be reunified with their families, but then the other percentage, the other half of kids that, they can't go home. Their parents weren't able to complete the treatment plan for whatever reason. Things were not ready to be.
Or they voluntarily terminated rights, or yeah,
that happens too. They, you know, at times decide I can't do this, and then they sign over their rights. So then these kids are waiting. They're waiting for adoption and permanency. So I just want to give a few stats here on adoption, because adoption from foster care, sometimes people don't realize that that's an option. So adoption gives belonging to those who aren't able to be reunified with their birth family. Did you know that 23,000 kids age out of the foster care system each year without a family? 20% will instantly become homeless, and 56% will be homeless within 2 years. Over 40% of them never get to graduate high school. Less than 3% of former foster youth will ever earn a college degree. 1 out of every 4 kids will be in prison within 2 years. Many more will be addicted, suicidal, or even trafficked. These stats are just so sad. And with all these social wounds, like we talked about that earlier,
mm-hmm.
What's the answer?
Well, Brian Mavis, again, the founder of America's Kids Belong, has this great line where he says, a good family is better than a great program. We were wired to belong. We were all wired to need to fit into a family. And so adoption, you know, when it's, again, when you're talking about the kids who are eligible for adoption from foster care, about 1 in 4, that is another huge place to step in. And this is another area of really a lot of people don't know the stuff around this. So I've had conversations around people, and I commonly hear this, where, you know, people will wrongly equate all adoption as expensive, thinking in terms of like foreign adoption or private, you know, domestic adoption situations, where, which can be expensive. However, what a lot of people don't know is adoption from the U.S. foster care system is largely, in most cases, free. And so
the state will cover the
subsidize, yeah, for the costs,
you know, licensed, yep, adoptive, you know, families
for sure. And so again, this isn't to pit, you know, international adoption against domestic adoption here from foster care, but again, how many of these kids are just in our backyard that we don't know in our state, in our communities, that are waiting for a family? So America's Kids Belong has this incredible thing called the I Belong Project, which allows it's high quality videography and photography that brings adoptive eligible kids to these photo shoots. And a lot of times they're done in places that are really awesome, catered, and they really are sensitive on a day like that to really make it an awesome epic day, and, you know, kind of just, you know, spoil the kids just, mm-hmm, crazy with awesome stuff and swag. And
several of the states have celebrities, mm-hmm, or, yeah, you know, musicians, or, you know, people come in that it is a memory for a lifetime, yep, for these kids to, they tell their story,
yeah,
for the video project, so that people can see what they want in a family and what they're like. And, but they also, like, they leave there feeling like royalty.
Yeah. And it is the single most effective adoptive family recruitment tool that exists. When you can see visually and hear and capture sort of what are a lot of them, 90 seconds or, you know?
Usually about 3-4 minutes what is put on the website. Mm-hmm. And then, like, one of my jobs with America's Kids Belong is to then, like, take that longer video and bring it down to, like, a reel that goes on social media, 90 seconds or less, that, you know, then gets shared by thousands of people, you know, so that hopefully they can get a match. So, mm-hmm, if you're listening to this and you want to follow America's Kids Belong and just share I Belong Kids, like, you can be part of helping them to find a match.
Mm-hmm. And you'll see, listen on the website and in the videos, the states in which the kids are in. If you're in those states, you're going to have the best opportunity to, you know, if you were interested in pursuing adopting, you know, one of those kids, your best chances would be living in that same state. It is possible to adopt across states, but that's, you know, you're probably going to be a little bit down the priority list. But again, it does happen, so it's worth inquiring. So again, you'll have the links to see those videos, and you know, and of course, America's Kids and the I Belong Project, that's not exclusive to all of the kids available for adoption from foster care, you know, in your state. I mean, so you can, you know, go to your child welfare website and then kind of inquire through those steps to find, mm-hmm, you know, how to pursue adopting from foster care. So,
yeah. So I thought it would be really fun for this to, since we have fostered kind of all ages, like we've done littles, we've done elementary school age and a few teens as well. We could just tell a few stories or what it's really like to kind of foster that age group, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Memory lane here. So we're kind of looking back to,
2013.
Okay.
Yeah. So, what was it like for you to start caring for kids in foster care, that were like 0 to 5 years old, like that younger,
ooh,
age group?
That was white knuckling the whole way at the beginning. I was always thinking more, I really have always done well with teenagers. I used to be a caseworker in mental health in St. Louis. And, you know, my favorite age range were kind of teenagers and even upper teenagers into young adults, 18 and things like that. So for me, like, to go under 5, ooh, had to dig deep. But I really, really came to love those kids at that age. What I remember is so much energy and life, and, you know, just sort of, it felt like a lot of probably what they're experiencing with their trauma and uncertainty, like a lot of how we would meet them was in play. Mm-hmm. And having fun with them. And I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that age group for us was like, it was a very simple, routine, right? Like bedtime was at 7 o'clock. Like we had story time and we had outside time was the same time every day, you know, their routines were everything. So foster care in that age group was like, it was the beauty of the simple things and just kind of staying in the house a lot. We mm-hmm. didn't go out a lot with the kids. But I do remember one specific little girl that we cared for. She was 5 years old. Really, you know, just was sweet and just kind of had this very even temperament. And then she got some news from her birth mother at a visit once, and it threw her off to the point that, you know, the trauma of what she was dealing with in her own little 5-year-old mind started having some major behavior issues. And we tried several different things to try to reach her on an emotional level and talk with her and try to create as much safety as possible. But she really just continued to kind of spiral. And after talking with some supports that we had in our lives that helped kind of coach us in the foster parenting, just behaviors and things like that, I really saw that I was teaching so much to her behavior, but she just needed so much attunement. And so what we started doing was that every single time she got the twinkle in her eye and started acting out, which really is just pain. It's just, I'm scared beneath all of that. That's what she feels deep down because of all the uncertainty and not being able to be with her mom and all these things. When she would get that twinkle in her eye and start to act out, I would just like scoop her up and take her for individual time and like just pour on the love instead of teaching in correcting the behaviors and trying to get her back on track. And sure enough, that was the very thing that helped her kind of come back to herself, who she was showing us. Like she just was this content little girl for so long. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful lesson for us as parents, because we had parented our biological kids to that point, but hadn't dealt with those types of things before. So learning about what it looks like to attune and really see the pain that they're going through and figure out how to create felt safety mm-hmm. is just crucial for foster parents, especially, I mean, at any age, but especially in that 0 to 5, because you can't really just have a conversation with them like you can with older kids, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. So then we also worked with kids, elementary boys, especially, and then up into like lower young teenagers. So more of the like mm-hmm. 8 to 13-ish was our kind of other group that we
fostered. The oldest we ever had fostered. Was 14.
Mm-hmm. Which then I was a little more, definitely more my element then. So much activity and action and you know, as a guy, I think I saw where, I mean, these guys were just longing for, you know, just a positive male role model figure that they could look up to and talk about life and things like that. So I loved how much we did. I loved mountain biking with them. So, and I've shared in a previous episode of where I had a dream for having a bike shop one day and sure enough, got to have sort of this ongoing bike repair thing. So all these elementary kids wrecking their bikes and being rough on them and teaching them bike skills and then just hanging out and talking life, doing that. And, so fun and making trails in the woods. And, you know, just, I'll never forget a kid, and I've probably shared the story before, but he, you know, was just sharing with me when we were out mountain biking one time that I think he was proud of what he did, you know, kind of being brave in this moment on his bike. And he had a feather in his bike helmet, and, you know, he called himself Warrior. And, you know, he told me, you know, hey, we're warriors, aren't we? And I'll never forget, seared in my brain, is that image of looking at him, the wind is blowing his feather, and he's looking at me, and he's like 10, 11 or something, and like all that he had been through, and he's in foster care, and all this swirling uncertainty in his story, what's going to happen next, and how many adults would just be paralyzed by the anxiety of those circumstances. And for him, being a warrior meant, you know, he was brave for what he did on his bike. And I'm looking at him going, man, you're a warrior for who you are. Mm-hmm. Navigating this life with so much courage and bravery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, that was so inspiring to me. And so, I don't know, I guess I love those guys and getting to be with them in a really difficult chapter of their life and seeing a lot of goodbyes. You know, we had to mm-hmm. say goodbye to, you know, kids that were going home to bio families and adopted and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And there's a trust there as well that, you know, God is in control.
Going with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it was a beautiful mix of, like, you know, you have 8, 9, even 10-year-old boys that, you know, they're independent enough to, like, go take their showers and, like, you know, mm-hmm. eat on their own and, like, they can wipe up their mess and whatnot. But they still love to be cuddled.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we would sit on the couches and watch movies and play games and, you know, just, yeah. It was a really sweet age, that, like, 5 to 12 year olds, you know, even preteen, that they want that affection. They're not quite yet too cool. and they love being creative too,
yeah.
Man. All of our kids, yeah. That we fostered in that age group were so creative, from Legos to artwork to building things in the woods. And, you know,
well, and I'm sure too, like, for them, a lot of that was how they're just processing too, of, yeah. just like all this that's going on is just to sit with Legos, right. and to, you know, kind of have escapes. And,
you know, they did have some major, you know, moments of, you know, intense behavior things that
rage.
We were having to navigate. But by and large, they're just normal. They're normal kids.
Absolutely.
They just are going through some intense emotions because of their circumstances, which is completely understandable. And so, you know, again, going back to that, like, felt safety, like giving, you know, like a 10-year-old boy some handles, some things that he can hang on to that make him feel secure, mm-hmm. even though he doesn't know, like, what his future holds.
Yeah.
He doesn't know if he's for sure going to go home or if he's going to be adopted,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Well, and I think, like, looking back and remembering too, of, like, you know, the hard things with, in that particular age range for us, you know, kind of that, you know, elementary to upper elementary to almost, you know, middle school. I think a lot of the way, and this was boys who we had. So, but a lot of the way that they were processing, again, this mix of anger and grief and all this was through, like, just emotional outbursts that were usually very short lived, but it might be punching a wall or, you know, and then we, you know, kind of learned and had the tools to navigate, like, how to kind of, okay, you did that, and let's bring them down. And sometimes it was distracting them out of that through, like, mm-hmm. laughter to kind of, okay, you know, I mean, not in extreme cases, but, like, where, and then, it, you know, but you would see kind of these patterns of, okay, coming down, and this rage came out. And then often we'd be able to get to a point of talking through that. And then, you know, they would then often own, oh, I'm so sorry I did that. You know, and then maybe there was a consequence that would come from something that happened out of that, but it would, like, come,
right.
later when, yeah. they were at a good place. And then,
right.
So.
Yeah. Timing's everything. I think that's one of the things that, you know, people often ask is, like, okay, so I have my own biological kids. Like, I'm going to consider fostering, bringing kids from trauma into my home. Like, is this going to be a dangerous situation for mm-hmm. my kids, my biological mm-hmm. kids, what do I need to expect? And like Travis said, you know, the behaviors sometimes have these like outbursts. But as long as you build that like foundation of a relationship, it's like you can kind of move through those things right. and they do get better. Mm-hmm. Like it takes time. It takes like learning boundaries and learning routines yeah. and, you know, it can take a couple months. But through that process, like you're also teaching your biological kids about some of those behaviors and about grace and about forgiveness and about that they truly are safe, like that they have never known that internal chaos that these kids are experiencing. Like your biological kids don't know what that's like, mm-hmm. but they're seeing it happen before their eyes and they're starting to understand the pain of others
right.
and how to respond to that pain.
Well, as a mom and a mom that entered this space with all the uncertainty and also of like, yeah, those common fears, of course, as well. You have, you know, what are you saying to other moms and dads too of like, yeah, I love all of this, but yeah, I am still worried about like, you know, safety with my own biological. I mean, mm-hmm. what do you kind of say to some of that stuff around concerns around like,
yeah, I mean, I think that the caution is you always supervise everything, but truly we should do that with our biological kids as well. You know, you never know what they're, you know, what they're getting into or what mm-hmm. they're talking about. You just always have that listening ear, always have a watchful eye to know what is happening mm-hmm. right in front of you. You know, we had boundaries and rules about, you know, sharing blankets and like, you know, sharing beds, obviously, and like, you know, being alone in bathrooms or rooms, all those things are things that you establish safety boundaries that just say like, this is just what we're going to do. Like, just makes things.
And some of it too is like the pre-teaching to your own kids of like, hey, if someone says this or, you know, a word that we know is, you know, or asks you to do something that, yeah, I mean, there's kind of that almost advanced, right. you know, awareness stuff of like, you know, just be on the lookout. And if this happens, let us know. And so I think they're in the know on that. Yeah.
And there's so many incredible books and resources out there for like body safety and knowing and understanding your physical boundaries and things like that. So, I mean, you know, we're not going to, you know, claim to we're going to teach a whole thing on all the things you got to keep in mind. There's so many people who have written books about how to prepare your biological kids and your home and your family for becoming foster parents.
Well, and there's, for those, you know, you're referencing a lot of books. There's so much stuff online too, YouTube channels and people that are just like having lots of awesome videos that are just short, like, you know, whether it's mm-hmm. tutorials or real life things of like, hey, these situational things are really helpful. I would just say the last thing that comes to my mind of just as you look at that kind of stuff is it's very crucial to not, have a huge differentiation between your bio kids and then your kids in foster care in your house. When there's, you know, this very obvious like separation in terms of like, well, you guys are all going to bed at, you know, 8, but the same aged biological kid here, you know, of mine, you get to stay up till 9:30. Like, that's a hard issue if you're doing that stuff as a foster parent. Like, A, that's just messed up. But there's a problematic thing when kids in foster care see differences. Mm-hmm. Not that there's not, I guess, nuanced.
Well, we do parent to the individual yeah. child.
So,
like that is something that, you know, we've always believed that you parent to the behavior, you parent to what's going on. But in terms of general, like,
kind of
family
more
privileges
house rule, yeah, rules
and house
privileges,
rules, like those.
If there's stark differences, that's just going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. The kids will see right through that. It'll be resentful.
Well, it'll
probably
be
rebellion. And because it's hurtful, you know, and so you definitely don't. But
they want to feel like they belong,
yeah.
like they're the same.
Yeah.
as your biological kids, like they are
should,
welcome to be treated just the same. So,
and they should have that
yeah.
experience. So
one thing that we've also heard too is, you know, a lot of people, just like Travis said, you know, they're like, I can't do that. I would get too attached. We also hear really commonly like, oh, I'm not a superstar kind of parent. Like I could never do that. Like as if you have to have, you know, just perfect children, like biological kids, and you know, that you have to have all these skills and be a stay-at-home parent and to be able to even do this. And that's not at all true.
Right. Interestingly, for my work with America's Kids, I get to interview a lot of stories and profiles of people all over engaging the issue in different ways, and interviewed a couple of caseworkers from Tennessee who were in recruitment and support for child welfare. And one of the ladies responded with a line around, they often see, and I think I would totally agree with this being our experience, is that they would see the families that do best are the ones that, as she kind of described, are slightly chaotic. They can roll with the punches of things, of like, you know, of just, and so this idea that our family has to be so, have it all so together, that we're not there, that then we're kind of disqualified from doing this. And that's far from the truth as well. It's, mm-hmm. are you providing a loving, nurturing home? None of us as parents have it all figured out. I mean, geez, I'm, you know, I mean, the amount of times I'm having to come back to my oldest, especially, and be like, Jay, I'm really sorry for the way I said that. Or, you know, I lost it. I got too upset about that. And, you know,
in some ways, it's like our parenting has gone down since we were foster parents. We're a little less careful.
Well, but it's,
that's a whole other story.
Yeah, it's we're all in process. And so, yeah, it's your parenting. And I think that's the thing, too, is like when you'll talk to, I mean, I interviewed someone who they adopted 7 kids whose parents were killed in a car wreck in California. And again, it's this, and she's an influencer, but again, it's this thing of like people comparatively looking, I could never, you know, and that's an extremely, very extreme, but she's an ordinary mom, you know, that just has a love to open their home as empty nesters. And so I guess we tend to compare and contrast and just say, we think that we couldn't do this because we don't have what it takes. And really we want to be wise and smart about our capacity, about our, how is our self-care? You know, all these things. Do I have a supportive community? But at the same time, not just saying, you know, the ingredients of love and providing a nurturing home and stuff are the principal things. Mm-hmm. You know, can you provide that? You might be an incredible foster parent then. Mm-hmm. You know, and even if it's a season of your time that you're giving, you provided stability for, you know, either a family to get what they needed to do together, or for this kid to have stability and love in a home that, you know, then goes on to the next chapter of their life, you know, whether it's where that is. So it's immense. As we kind of wrap this up, you know, a lot of this was talking about foster parenting. I kicked it off with, there are so many ways, and no less important is supporting foster families. Again, the attrition is staggering, up to 50%, quit within a year. A lot of that's due to feeling unsupported, isolated, things like that. Again, we will have links to some of what America's Kids Belong is doing with foster-friendly communities. There's an app that's in several of the states that we're in that if you're a business, you can sign up and provide goods and services discounts to foster families. It's a huge way to let foster families feel seen. As foster families, you can discover these businesses on the app and just feel like you are valued and supported in your community by the businesses. And then there's also resources for faith communities on how to support foster families in your church. We have, you know, sermon guides and toolkits in that as well for just the faith part of that. But so many ways to get involved. You know, we'll talk about things like wrap support, where you're wrapping around a foster family. And maybe it's providing a meal or helping with tutoring or things like that. And those are just huge ways you can, you know, support. There's becoming a guardian ad litem. That's a whole nother thing that you can look up as a, you know, an advocate to, represent the kid and, you know, all of that. And so all kinds of things, all kinds of ways to get engaged beyond just being a foster parent. Everything matters. Closing with this beautiful line from the writer Simone Weil that says, attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. So just giving your attention to foster care, looking at it, researching, seeing where does your life, the gifts you have, your influence, your whatever that is, where can that converge into foster care, and you will change a life. I've said this before, loving a kid in foster care is not rocket science, but it is rocket fuel and will change the future trajectory of a life forever. So...
Amen.
All right. Thanks for listening to the podcast today. I hope you found something helpful, hopeful, or thought-provoking. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to any resources mentioned in the podcast. And we also have links in the notes for our own resources to check out. We would really love to hear from you. And we're also really grateful for your support by sharing the podcast episodes with your friends and family and leaving a rating and review. May we all regain and maintain our wonder, hope, and inspiration as we look at our ordinary through new and fresh eyes.